This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann. I'm at Otago Polytechnic today. Mawera was going to join us, but she's been called away. But I am joined by the very fabulous Phoebe Eden Mann, who, yes, I am related to. Welcome, Phoebe.
Hi, Dad.
How are you going?
Good. Working in the disability sector right now is very much like the meme with the dog who's in the bar and the bar's on fire and the dog's just sitting there going, this is fine. That's what it feels like working kind of, you know, social sector right now. But, you know, we're getting through it, getting there.
So what's happening?
The government is making a lot of cuts to a lot of very important funding, and the upcoming budget is going to be an interesting day for the social sector. So not just the disability sector, which is where I work, but, you know, kind of any social development-y type thing that's reliant on funding. It's going to be interesting. Interesting is the word that is probably most appropriate for radio that springs to mind. They're making a lot of cuts, and we knew that the cuts were coming. We could see, based on what they campaigned on, that, you know, things would be cut, and they are indeed delivering on those promises. I didn't think it was going to be this brutal this quickly, but, you know, it's what they're doing, and it's our job to make it work with what we've got and to make sure that we are, especially in my case in the disability sector, supporting some of the most vulnerable people in our community with what we have.
So let's do a bit of a recap. What is your role?
I'm the National Policy Analyst for CCS Disability Action.
And who are they?
We are the largest pan disability, which means come one, come all disabilities, we'll deal with everything. So we're the largest pan disability support organisation in the country. So we provide frontline service things. So we have the bulk of our work is it's support work. So support workers, so people who amazing support workers. I could not do their jobs. They are absolutely fantastic human beings who are doing, you know, the day-to-day support work of disabled people in order to ensure that they are disabled people are able to live their lives as they should be living their lives. But we also have the advocacy, which is where I'm at.
If it wasn't for the government changing things, what would you be working on now? I mean, what's like the goals of that sector, and what are you trying to achieve?
So the budget is being released relatively soon. So, you know, if this government wasn't a government and it was, you know, if it was a blow on for the last one, it would be around this time, and it is this time this year, that we submit the budget policy statement submission. So with the budget, prior to the budget, which is, you know, where the government puts out where all the money for the next financial year is going, you know, it's what's getting funded, how things are getting funded, how much things are getting funded, and each year CCS Disability Action does a budget analysis, which involves me working stupidly long hours on budget day with a lot of caffeine and snacks and an Excel spreadsheet and try not to lose my mind tracking where the funding is going and what the funding's changed. And so we've done that for several years, so we can actually track where, you know, like specific funding lines, we could track what's changed over time. And so, you know, that's a really useful tool because we're able to look back and go, okay, cool, well, you know, in 2021, this is what the funding was, and this is what the funding is now, and here's, you know, population changes, et cetera, we can go, well, there's actually been an overall decrease in funding, but there's been an increase in demand, you know, funding has remained the same, but the wait times have increased. So that's why budget day tracking is really important for us. And that gets released to the general public as well. So I've been told it's a useful tool from other people, and I'm pretty sure they just tell me that to make me feel better that they're not the ones having to do the analysis on budget day. But before budget day, what happens is every government releases a budget policy statement, which is where they kind of indicate where the money, or, you know, they kind of indicate their key priorities, and where basically they indicate to the world where the money is likely going. The budget hasn't been finalized yet, and it's kind of the public's chance to go, okay, cool, but this is really, really important to fund, and you guys haven't thought of it yet. So those submissions close on the 28th, so next week, and it's a really important submission. Like, it's, you know, all submissions are important, but some of them are like really, really important. So, you know, some of them you look at and you go, yeah, we'll submit on that, but, you know, not necessarily on the massive highest list of priorities. That's like, you have to submit on that. So that's what I'm doing at the moment. And especially this year, compared to other years, I've been, you know, I can't even remember how long I've been in this job, but certainly this year, it's been, I think this is the most stressed I've been before a budget.
I want to play your first music track, but while that's playing, I want you to think about, I think my question is, because you've always told me that every policy is a disability policy.
Yeah.
So there's effects all over the place, but there's also specific disability policy. And I think we want to talk about both of those two sets of things. But first, let's have Bowie, Suffragette City. Why this?
It is an amazing song. I was listening to it whilst cleaning the house. It's been stuck in my head for a while. Yeah, you and my fiance were both shocked. I'm not the cleanest person. I'm not dirty, but I'm also the kind of person that has a fully functioning floor drobe. I know where everything is in the floor drobe, and it's fine. Unfortunately, my in-laws are coming to stay, and I had to clean the house. So I was listening to that, and it's been stuck in my head ever since. It's a great song.
Suffragette City.
just put my spine out of place.
So, every policy is a disability policy. The government is on a 6% or something find money drive.
Yep.
Let's not mention why they're doing that, but they're doing
yep.
it.
It's being done. Yep. Yep.
How is that in general affecting the disability sector?
So, Faikaha, which is the Ministry for Disabled People, they're facing public service or, you know, public sector cuts as well. They've got, along with several other ministries, are facing cuts to the number of public servants. Obviously, cuts to any public servants. I spend a lot of time working with people, or, you know, with public servants, and they are some of the most phenomenal and hardworking people I know. And it's really heartbreaking watching so many of them just lose their jobs, and there's nothing really they can do about it. Well, there is nothing they can do about it, and because all the other ministries are facing the same situation, it's not like they can, you know, just, if you're like a policy analyst, it's not like you can just jump ship to another ministry, because all the other ministries are facing the same problem and there's hiring freezes, and it's a really brutal situation for people at the moment. Never been more glad to be in NGO land. Our pay may not be great, but it is weirdly somewhat a safer place to be right now than in the public sector. So when looking at every policy is a disability policy, a lot of, especially to Faikaha, so again, the Ministry of Disabled People, those cuts are going to affect disabled people because the workload for that ministry is not going to decrease, but the number of people who are able to do that workload is going to significantly decrease. So demand isn't going anywhere. In fact, demand is actually going up because we have an aging population. So our disability numbers are increasing and they will continue to increase. But, and also things like with the effects of like long COVID and things like that. So the demand isn't going anywhere, but the number of people who can help is significantly decreasing, and that's a big problem.
I imagine that across the public service, while they might not describe it this way, they might have like the thing that they do. Oh, and then kind of on top of that, or the icing on the cake of doing that is making sure that that thing is works for disability. Almost like it's the icing on the cake of the thing we need to make work.
Yeah, pretty much. It often is an afterthought, in my opinion. You know, often we'll get consulted, like at the very, not just us, but, you know, disabled people in general. You know, the consultation process will open at the very end. And it's like, oh, but you guys have already printed. It's like, you guys have already printed out the books. You've already printed out the booklets. Like, you guys have clearly sprung for colour printing here. Like, I don't know how much of this we can actually change.
The policy equivalent of building a flight of stairs and then thinking about how you can make it accessible.
Yeah, pretty much, rather than just building a ramp. It's like, guys, we could have, if we just had a chat about this for like 5 minutes at the conception, like we possibly would be able to avoid many of these problems we've got now.
So that's gonna get worse, because those are the things that are, like it or not, considered nice to haves.
Yeah, and it's certainly some of the rhetoric that's come out from certain ministers has been a concern regarding disabled people, and I have to be careful because in my job I'm not allowed to, you know, we are a non-political organisation, but some of the comments have been a concern, and I think that's been reflected in some of the decisions that have been made around disability funding, particularly recently, where we had the disability minister seemingly make decisions, sweeping decisions about purchasing funding, which is purchasing funding pays for things like respite care, as well as, you know, modifications and equipment, and it's really important. But one of the biggest, like, it pays for respite care. Like, I can't say enough how important respite care is. And that funding, it was terribly communicated. They announced it via Facebook and then turned off comments where everyone went, what? And I was like, you know, talking to one of my friends who works in comms, I was like, did you see what was going on? She went, yeah, turning off comments was a mistake. I'm like, yeah. To be fair, I don't think they anticipated the backlash being quite as swift and strong from the entire community, to be fair. But they can't, like, that funding was so important, and it then came out that it hadn't really been consulted, that, you know, those decisions had just been made, to the point where the Prime Minister had to step in, and now all major funding decisions for Faikaha have to be approved by Cabinet. That's like an unprecedented step of, oh dear, you made some choices and they were not good. And that's what the reality is that we're dealing with, is that, you know, these are people's lives. This is funding that is in order to ensure that disabled people and their family and whānau are able to live their lives with dignity and, you know, are able to live their lives in the way that they want to, however that might look like. And you just have people making sweeping statements, like Penny Simmons, who's the disability minister, talking about in Parliament Question Time, talking about how some of that funding went to parents who were getting pedicures. And I think she also mentioned overseas travel at one point. Who is using that funding to get pedicures? Like, who? No one is using it to get pedicures. Like, no, nobody is doing that. But those kind of sweeping statements and then decisions about funding, you can see you can see the logic of those decisions when you see the thought process behind what that funding is being used for.
Isn't there a maxim about the measure of society being how it looks after its most vulnerable? I'm sure there's a quote that someone famous said.
Yes, so, pretty much. I can't remember who said it, but yeah.
So how can we use that? How can we reinforce that? And maybe that's happened kind of by default. As you say, questions about disability funding, specific disability funding, are now having to run through the cabinet. But this is the cabinet that's also fast-tracking everything else. So we can't rely on the fact it has to go through cabinet to make good decisions.
Yes, not exactly reassuring when they go, don't worry, cabinet's got it. I'm like,
So how do we sort of like promote that the importance of this as that this is not a thing to be trifled with, and this is actually what's in.
Some adults are honestly far too gone. I hate to say that, but some adults are far too gone, and you just can't get through to them. So I think it starts with teaching empathy at a young age. I think it starts with teaching kids that disability is not a, you know, it's not a big, bad, scary thing. It just is what it is. Like, you know, I remember there was looking after, Lucy, who's, you know, who's my niece. I think she was 4 at the time. And I'm a disabled person who occasionally needs to use a cane as a mobility tool or a mobility aid. And Lucy was going through her Y phase, which lasted forever. Do you remember how long her Y phase lasted, Dad? Because, oh my God, it went on for like 18 months of just everything you said was just like, why? I was like, oh God, well, at least you're asking questions. And she asked why I had a stick, and then why my knees and hips were wonky. I had to try and explain ankylosing spondylitis, which is an autoimmune arthritis disease that I have. I had to try and explain that to a 4-year-old. And so, you know, I did. I just said, you know, went the most age-appropriate explanation I could think of. And she went, okay, and then ran off. And then next time I saw her, she asked me if my knees were still creaky. And so she's 4, or at that point she was 4 years old. And granted, she is one of the most empathetic children I've ever met. But I truly think that's where it starts, is teaching children that it's not a big, bad, scary thing. It just is what it is. Some bodies and brains don't work the way other people's bodies and brains do, and that's okay. It's about figuring out what works for everybody and making sure that everybody is safe and supported and okay. Some adults, however, have missed that memo, and I'm not convinced even with time that we'll get through to them. And like, you know, the thing is with disability is I have, you know, on Twitter how you have like the cover photo up the top. Mine has been, I think, for like the last 7 years. I'm not changing it because it's still incredibly true. Disability population is the only minority group that you can become a part of at any given point in time. You have no idea what is going to happen to you each day. You're one accident or one medical event away from becoming part of our ragtag group of people. Like, and people don't think about that. And so they often go along with this, oh, well, you know, I'm fine. You know, why do I care about this funding being cut? Because that could very quickly affect you, is why you should care. And also because we are human beings who deserve dignity and respect.
Bubble Sprite of the Forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi aroha nui kia koutou ko tāhua hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, and it's important that we give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the love, the care, the compassion, the empathy, the understanding, the support, the delight, the recognition, the acknowledgement that we all so richly deserve and can innately provide. I'm speaking to you now from a beautiful Stuneden morning here in Aotearoa, and I have just been out walking on the beach, which has been so beautiful, and I've been paddling in the sea, and I'm feeling very refreshed by this and very calmed by this and very grateful that I've been able to do this. And beautiful Sam, who we all know and love, has been wonderful, and he's reminded me about doing my show. And of course, you know, I'm so grateful to be part of Blown Bubbles and part of this amazing community of stories and storytellers. And this process of raraka kōrero is so important for all of us interweaving our stories and understanding one another and our world on deeper and deeper levels. And I got to thinking, you know, about reminders and thinking, oh my goodness, you know, we are all in a position where we can say, hey, I will remind you so that you can go out and be very much in the present and relishing staring into the sun and the golden path of the sun reflected on the water, on the sand, you know. And we can ask each other. I said to Sam, will you remind me please in the morning, because, and I said I'll set an alarm as well and all this sort of thing, but you know, in acknowledging the help and the support that we need, the reminders that we need, this can be very beneficial. And Sam did kindly remind me, and now here I am talking to you, so it's worked very well. So I think for all of us, I now am going to reframe a few things in my mind and just think about who could I talk to, who could I ask for reminders, and who could I just gently remind of their own beauty, their own magnificence as time goes on. I think this is an important duty, and this is an important gift that we can give each other, whether it's speaking about how we perceive each other, how we understand one another's capacity, because sometimes we can't see these things for ourselves, whether it's the opportunity of reminding ourselves of things, that inner caretaker coming forward and speaking to us. All of these reminders are so helpful throughout our daily lives. And I know for me, this month is very busy with Wild Dunedin and all sorts of very exciting events. So I'm in the process of laying the foundation for this month. And with this reminder, I will remember to bring in and include these moments of reintegration and clarity throughout this month, so that I can have times of being very present and in the moment, and times of refocusing on what I want to create and accomplish. So I really hope for you, you can bring in reminders for yourselves. And thank you all for everything you're doing every day, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. I'm talking with Phoebe Edenman. Phoebe, we've been talking about the upcoming budget and the likely implications for the disability sector and what you're doing about it. What positive things are happening in the disability sector at the moment?
There's actually quite a few. The disability community and the disability sector as a whole are actually more united, more united than ever. And honestly, and it's look, this is the same for all sectors, but trying to get some organisations and some, you know, some people, everybody on the same page, it occasionally is like herding cats with a leaf blower, because some people have, you know, completely opposite needs. So trying to get, you know, everybody on the same page can be an actual nightmare. It sometimes takes something like what is currently happening to get everybody on the same page, and that's exactly what has happened. I've honestly never seen the community more united, and also the public are taking interest, which is really interesting. Would have been good if they'd taken interest, you know, like prior to October 2023, but you know, you win some, you lose some. And I think it was like, you know, in the media especially, it is hard to get disability issues covered. And our amazing comms team work incredibly hard to get that coverage. And things like the cuts or the benefit sanctions that are being introduced and the purchasing funding freeze that was, you know, just announced on Facebook with seemingly no consultation, that got into like front page of the news, and it was like, okay, you guys know that we exist. Awesome, cool. Well, while you're here, can we talk to you about some other issues we've got? So while you're here, you know, thanks for stopping by. Here's the, you know, here's the binder of other issues we've covered. But it was really, really interesting that it took things like benefit sanctions for non-disabled people who have no lived experience of disability to kind of wake up and go, oh, okay, that's not great. And so in the worst way possible, it has actually united people and gotten quite a bit of attention on disability issues just in the last couple of weeks, which has been amazing. Again, it would have been great if we had had this attention circa October 2023, but we're here now. We're making do with what we've got. And there's been, I think there's a protest on the 19th, and I'm pretty sure there are nationwide protests about disability, like the you know, the sanctions and cuts to disability funding. And there's a protest in Dunedin, I think it's the 19th. I've got the Facebook invite somewhere. And it's really cool to see, you know, like when I clicked on it, I could see, you know, a lot of other politically engaged disabled people who, you know, I'm friends with and things. I saw like, you know, all of them have already clicked attending. But then a whole bunch of like non-disabled people who I've never seen on these kind of, you know, like event groups, they're all clicking that they're going. I'm like, have we suddenly managed to get people actually engaged?
What is the message? I know you're not organizing those protests, but what are the messages that you would like them to be saying? What would be helpful? What messages would be helpful to be amplified?
listen to disabled people. So many of the problems that happen in the disability sector and to disabled people in general are because non-disabled people assume that they know what they're doing when it comes to disability issues, and they just don't. And that's really hard because it's often done with the best of intentions, but we need to be amplifying the voices of disabled people because it is our lives that are being most affected by these changes. And what we might think needs to be done might differ quite a lot from a non-disabled person thinking what might needs to be done. So the best for people going to the protests who are non-disabled, honestly, thank you for going, thank you for showing support, thank you for caring. Amplify the voices of disabled people. Do listen. Just turn up and listen. And write to your MPs, write to your local MP. Become more engaged. Look at submissions that are open online. If you've got, you know, an hour and a half, it doesn't need to be a long submission. It can be bullet points. If it gets your point across, bullet points are fine. But, you know, be more engaged. Talk to your local MPs. We need everybody on the same page, and we need people to care, and we need people to continue to care, and we need people to continue to help amplify the voices of disabled people.
Let's take the second of your music tracks. Let's have Mika, Grace Kelly. Why this?
So this song came out when I was about 14, I think. And much like Suffragette City, it is on my I Have to Clean the House playlist. The look on Dad's face right now when he can, I know how to vacuum. I'm not very good at it, but I know how to vacuum. And so, yeah, this and Suffragette City have been in my head for about a week, as has Bohemian Rhapsody, but Dad has informed me Bohemian Rhapsody is too long to play on the radio.
Not if we want to hear you as well.
Yeah, so we're going with Grace Kelly instead.
The last time we talked, Mr. Smith, you reduced me to tears. I promise you it won't happen again.
Do I attract you? Do I repulse you with my queasy smile? Am I too dirty? Am I too flirty? Do I like what you like? Yeah, I could be wholesome, I could be loathsome, guess I'm a little bit shy. Why don't you like me? Why don't you like me without making me try? I try to be like Grace Kelly, but all her looks were too sad. So I tried a little Freddy. I've got an entity mind.
I'm not afraid to die.
were too sad. So I tried a little Freddy. I've got an answer to him.
Phoebe, you've got a busy couple of weeks coming up.
Yep, that's one word for it, yep.
What's the best outcome you can hope for?
That the government suddenly changes their base ideological ideas and decides to drop all the sanctions, increase benefits, and massively increase the disability allowances. I think it's doable.
I don't think it's necessarily changed their base ideological stuff, because they didn't campaign on let's cut disability budgets. No one would campaign on that.
They kind of did. They did, but in a sneak, kind of, unless you're reading through all their policies, you're not going to pick it up way. So they did campaign on benefit sanctions. I believe they were specific in that policy that job seekers with the medical exemption, I believe that was included in the policy. The reason why that is tricky is because so many people who are on job seekers with medical exemption should actually be on the supported living payment, which is, you know, essentially it used to be the sickness benefit, the invalid's benefit, until under the last national government, it was, they kind of combined seven benefits into like three. And it's really tricky to get on SLP, but we've got a whole bunch of people on job seekers with medical exemption who actually should be on SLP and are not. So there are a lot of barriers to getting on SLP. And so a lot of people who don't know how to navigate the system don't manage to get on it. Because it needs to be an individually led situation. And so people just get stuck on job seekers with medical exemption, which is really tragic, because under the sanctions that are kind of, I think said coming into effect in like June, they're going to be affected by this. They're going to be affected by those sanctions. And so are people like with cancer who are on job seekers with medical exemption. It's like, I've never had cancer. I can imagine I wouldn't really want to go to a job readiness seminar, you know, post chemo, but that under these sanctions, that's what people are going to be doing. Or they risk losing the support, what little support they've got.
So if people are going to take your advice and write to their MP, perhaps not their local MP, because they might want to find a different MP to write to, depending on what colour their MP is.
I would say write to your MP regardless. So the reason I say that is because so electorate MPs are, you know, they are kind of beholden to party lines, but electorate MPs especially are beholden to the views of their electorate. They need, unless they're really high up, you know, relatively high up on the list, and electorate MPs don't necessarily tend to be super high up on the list, especially in like safe seats. They don't tend to be high up on the list. So if your local MP, or especially if your local MP has completely differing views on what to what an issue that you've got, I would still suggest trying to engage with them have a conversation with them.
So what's the message that we need to get across to them?
Disabled people deserve dignity. We deserve empathy. We are human beings. We have human rights just like everybody else. New Zealand signed the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Disabled People with Disabilities. We're not meeting our obligations under that convention. And this, you know, we're people. I'm a very privileged, like, I recognize I'm an incredibly privileged disabled person, but I am not necessarily the norm. When you look at statistics, I'm an outlier, like quite a significant outlier. You've got 40 something percent of disabled people on the West Coast don't even have NCA level one. I have 2 postgraduate qualifications. I am an outlier. And so I recognize that I am incredibly privileged. And a huge part of that is to do with who my parents were. But so many disabled people don't have that, don't have the resources that I had growing up. And it's really important that we don't just see disabled people who are doing great, or, you know, who are doing pretty good in life and go, okay, well, they're fine. Because usually we're the outliers. The fact that I could buy a house, I'm an outlier in the situation. But everybody else is, you know, the majority of other disabled people are significantly more likely to live in poverty, significantly more likely to experience poor outcomes, especially if you're Māori and Pacifica. Those are the things that we need to remember, is that fundamentally we are human beings who deserve dignity and respect, and we have rights, we have dreams just like everybody else. We just need a little bit of support in order to get there.
Thank you for that. I have the questions to end the show with, but we've kind of run out of time, so I'm just going to ask you 2 of them. What's your superpower?
Mm-hmm. I think every time I come on here, I say my answer is sarcasm. I'm sticking with that answer. Yesterday, I got told that I went into full select committee mode. full select committee mode when answering some silly questions. Well, what I deemed in my mind were silly questions. They probably weren't silly. I was probably just very tired and just wanted it to end. I think at the moment, especially if you don't laugh, you're going to have a mental breakdown. Or if you don't laugh, you are going to burn out real quick. And I can't afford to do that, because I love my job. I am very proud to work in the sector, and I'm very proud that as a disabled person myself, I am given the privilege to advocate for other disabled people. I can't afford to burn out, not just because we've just bought a house and I literally can't afford to burn out, but this is what I do. This is what I love. And so if I don't laugh about it and I don't have the running sarcastic commentary in my head, I'm going to have a mental breakdown. One of my work wife, apparently now I have a work wife, sent me a TikTok yesterday that just, it had a t-shirt, or it had a jumper on it that just said chaos coordinator. We're getting matching jumpers. We're getting matching chaos coordinating jumpers. Because that's what it is. It's coordinating chaos at the moment. But it's okay. We'll get through it.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Listen to disabled people. I guarantee you know at least one. We make up around 25% of the population. I promise you, you know someone with a disability. It may be an invisible disability, but I pinky promise you, you know someone. Listen to them. If your disabled friend is telling you something, don't just brush it off and go, what happened? You know, they're doing all right. How bad can it be? Because they might be doing all right, but the majority of disabled people aren't. Please keep advocating, keep listening, keep showing up. Engage with your local MPs, engage with, you know, community action. Preferably stay sane whilst doing so. I've heard chocolate and tea helps.
It always does. Thank you very much for joining me.
That's all right. Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Oh.
up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy. I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low. Anyway the wind blows doesn't really matter.
Around the world. We're broadcast every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We have a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. I'm Sam Wang at Otago Polytechnic today, and I've been joined by Phoebe Eden-Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Marty Wah.
Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo, Figaro,
Magnifico.
I'm just a poor boy, nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this monstrosity.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Bismillah, no, we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah, we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah, we will not let you go.
Let me go!
We'll not let you go.
Let me go!
We'll not let you go.
Let me go!
Oh, mamma mia, mamma mia!
Mamma mia, let me go! Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me. For me.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.